morning, sir. Can you hear me, sir?
Yes. Could you let she tell me when you come on to let her know?
Okay, well, you
close this door.
Okay, sir.
Okay.
Okay, now, before we get started, now, what is your name, sir?
Roosevelt July.
Okay, Mr. July, the Honorable Mr. Louis Kiwanis will conduct your hearing this morning. So you just hold on, and he'll be right with you, sir.
Okay.
Mr. July, can you hear me clearly?
It's too clear. It's kind of blurry, like.
Hold on one second. We sort of readjust our microphone. Can you hear me any better now?
Yeah.
Okay. Great. Can you state your full name and ADC number for the record?
Yes. Mr. Roosevelt, July 03-100.
Isn't it? Is it 03-5-100?
Yeah.
Okay.
03. I'm so used to saying 35-100. They have us put the O in front of it.
Okay.
35-100.
Thank you, sir. Just wanted to make sure. Well, good morning. You are appearing before the Arizona Board of Executive Clemency for a 31-44A hearing to consider regular parole, absolute discharge, or home arrest. I would like to introduce you to the members of the board conducting the hearing with you today. If you can see on the video conference screen, I'll begin with the opposite side of the bench working toward me. We have the Honorable Ms. Gail Rittenhouse. At the center of the bench, we have our esteemed board chairman, Dr. C.T. Wright. Next to me is the Honorable Mr. David Neal. My name is Louis Quinones. I'll be serving as the panel lead for your hearing. I would like to begin with the following summary. Mr. Roosevelt July, ADC number 035100, is 61 years old. The crimes of conspiracy to commit murder in the first degree and kidnapping occurred on or about January 5th, 1991. He was approximately 34 years old at the time of the incident offense. He was found guilty by jury trial on May 14th, 1992 and sentenced to 25 years to life imprisonment with both counts to run concurrent. He has an extensive criminal history, which includes prior felony convictions for kidnapping, child molestation, armed robbery, aggravated assault, and sexual assault. It should be noted that the offenses represented an escalation in violence. I will read a summary of the current offense in question on August 23rd, 1991. Mr. July and his wife, Barbara Garris, conspired to murder Lily Egan. At that time, Mr. July was in custody in the Maricopa County Jail pending trial for robbery. Lily Egan was the victim of the robbery case, and she was going to testify against Mr. July at the trial. Mr. July and his wife paid $400 to a third party to kill the victim. That third party was an undercover police officer who arrested Barbara Garris after she gave him the money and a hand-drawn map of the victim's residence. While Mr. July's wife was the co-conspirator who met with the undercover officer, it was Mr. July who made the arrangements via phone from the jail. The undercover officer had multiple conversations with Mr. July about the contract and the payment. And the motive for the defendant was clearly witness elimination. Mr. July was arrested for this offense in jail. He was later convicted by a jury for conspiracy to commit first-degree murder. According to Mr. July's institutional progress report, he's had considerable programming in the Arizona Department of Corrections, but no sexual offender treatment, and I am making reference to past cases, because I recognize that he's in prison right now for the conspiracy and kidnapping charges. He has a release plan, which includes living in Sac Rack, And those are his words. I'm not sure if that expression is still in play. I believe he's referring to the Pima County Reentry Center. Is that correct, Mr. July?
Yes, sir.
You're talking about the facility in Tucson?
Yes.
Okay.
Yes, sir.
He also has a plan to pursue social security benefits. He has had a moderate amount of discipline from 1982 through 2016, with his last major on January 13, 2015 for disrupting count. This appears to be his 11th hearing before the board. He has no letters of support in his parole request packet. We do have a letter dated March 6, 2019 from the Maricopa County Attorney's Office, which opposes parole. Mr. July, this hearing is another chance for the board to get to know you. Can you tell us in your own words about the events that resulted in your incarceration and why you think you should be considered for supervised release? Thank you, sir.
Yes. It's been a while back, and I want to be straight and honest about this. I was very young at the time. I was going back to prison, and I was very scared because back then I had finished doing time for a sex offense, and I was very nervous about going back to prison, and I was scared out of my head, and I made some bad decisions. That was one of the reasons why that occurred like that. I was young, very uneducated. I didn't have no goals of what I really wanted to do. I wasn't thinking accurate back then. I was just a young fool back then. And a guy that was using my three-way phone, he introduced me to how we could get rid of the victim, where if I go to trial, that I would be set free, and at the time, that's all I was thinking about. Now that I look back on it and everything, I'm, to be honest with you, I'm glad that things turned out the way that it did, because with educating myself and everything, I understand why we have a constitution, which is something I never knew nothing about. I understand why we have laws now. And if I had the chance to do things over, knowing what I know now, I would have never even had this type of case. And another thing that I would like to address, like I said in my letter, 43 years ago, when I first caught my sex case, I was 18 years old. And it wasn't like somebody I just, you know, didn't know on the streets. We had a relationship, and things just, we got to drinking one night, and things just went, you know, out of hand. She couldn't go home, so we stayed out too late, so we spent the night at my sister's house. Then the next morning, I took her home and everything. But I've had several classes in the 70s and throughout the 80s on my sex crime. That helped me better understand sex crimes, and I learned a valuable lesson behind that. That's a crime that I would never have ever again.
If you can follow up on that, Mr. July, although I recognize that we're here for very specific charges, how old was your victim on the sex crime?
She was 15.
So you were 18 and she was 15 years old?
Yes.
Was that part of your previous kidnapping charge too?
Yeah, they had charged me with kidnapping because we had went over to our sister's house and stayed all night.
Just one second, I have a couple of questions here. But I want to make sure that I'm clear. So you had a previous armed robbery conviction
a 1985 sexual assault conviction. So that sexual assault case from 1985 is when you were 18 with the 15-year-old?
No, 85. That was in 80, I think. I think that was in 80.
Okay.
That was with, that actually was a prostitution case that went bad because we was out drinking and riding around.
Okay.
And then we ate dinner, we rode around. Matter of fact, she was an older woman. She was somebody I had went to school with in high school, and I had met her years later after I got out of prison. We rode around and everything, and I didn't like the fact that after we was drinking, you know, getting high, I'm going to keep it honest with you. We rode around, went to Palco Park and everything, and then she wanted to charge me $35 for sex. And we had sex, but, you know, I told her, I said it wasn't right, and I gave her $5, and the bad thing about it is she waited 10 whole days before she even said anything, and we struggled. I had left my wallet in her car, and she took all my money and turned my wallet in and said that I had sexual assaulted her, and I went to trial on that. That was a separate issue.
Pardon me, sir, because when I was reviewing your history, I skipped down to 1980 and 85. There was the 1975 child molestation, so that's the when you were 18.
Yes.
And the victim was 15? Okay, thank you.
Yes.
At least you're helping me understand. And I don't have any documentation in Ames that you went through sexual offender training, so did you have a different sort of program back then, or did you go through something on probation?
Well, see, back then, it was mandatory that we took it when we first came, because I took classes from 75 to 76, then I took another class in 77, and then when I, 80, there was another class that we took back then. Mr. R. Hill was the sponsor for that class. I had certificates in all those classes too, but my mom passed away in 03. She had a lot of my stuff then. I don't know what happened to a lot of it because I was in prison then.
Well, thank you, sir.
Pardon me. Even when I got out of prison for that, my parole officer had me take classes, and I was successful in all my classes.
Thank you, Mr. July, for helping me understand your history. Your plan states, again, that you would like to transition to SACRAC or the Pima Reentry Center. Why are you interested in that location, sir?
Because they have many good programs that I've heard about through the counselors here, and it would help me ease my way back into society. It would give me a place of some type of authority where they could oversee me from relapsing, because they have programs, they train you for jobs, they have a parole officer right there, and they have a lot of good counseling groups. You know, I want to get out and be able to give back to my society, somebody that was in the same position that I once was in, because most of my life I had a problem with alcohol, and I'm around it in prison, and I still refuse to drink it. I'm free of drugs now. I used to smoke cigarettes. I gave all of that up. You know, I have no bad habits now. And I just want to help somebody that can see things from my point of view that help me get on the right track. I made a lot of mistakes in my lifetime. I feel bad about it. There's been times when I've woken up at night and just cried my heart out because of the way I feel about my life, and I wanted to do something about it. I wrote several 12-step programs also to to try to get a sponsor to help me out as if I was released from prison, so I could help someone. And also, I want to try to, you know, give people my view of what alcohol done to me and the many problems that it created in my life, to try to help them get off of it and not make the same choices that I made, because I made some terrible choices in my life. And through time, these programs, that I took several programs that also helped me. And now today, even with the peer education programs that we have now today, I still try to give good advice to younger people that, you know, when they have problems, you know, I try to give them good advice, because if I can't give them nothing good, I don't say nothing.
Thank you, Mr. July. I do appreciate how straightforward you've been with accounting for yourself, to include the crime itself. I will say we hear a lot of cases, and we ask direct questions, and sometimes people kind of dance around the issue, if you will. But I do appreciate you admitting to the murder for hire, so to speak.
Yes.
I think you also have plans to pursue Social Security benefits. So are you eligible for any Social Security benefits, sir?
Yes, I'm eligible for SSI, and I'm eligible for DDS. I have a packet which I showed you. They wanted us to apply, because there's been several inmates that haven't got out, that they helped out with security for clothes. They help you get, they loan you money for a job. Well, that's not a loan. You can take out a loan, because I just got a business, I got a financial business certificate that I just got out of enrollment with here for last year. And it helps you open up a business. Because see, I used to cut grass, and I had two lawnmowers and some cutting shears and everything, and I used to cut grass for like twice a week. This was back in 90, and I would only charge like $50 a month, and I'd cut their grass and trim their oleander bushes and stuff like that twice a week. I would go every 2 weeks and do that, charge them, you know, $50 a month back then. I did pretty good with that.
Sir, a couple of follow-up questions. One, you stated that you have cleaned up from everything. You said you don't smoke, let alone drink alcohol. You recognize that drugs are available inside the Department of Corrections. So, how long have you been clean?
I've been clean since 2012. I've had, since the last time I came to the parole board, I've had 8 more UAs. They've all been positive. I mean, negative. Did I say positive? They've all been negative, because when they're positive, we get a write-up, and I don't know how they do that. But all my UAs been clean. I haven't been using drugs. Try to talk to other people that does, because sometimes even after all these years, you still have people in the yard approach you, trying to sell you drugs. And then you tell them no over and over and over, and they still try.
I noticed that you had a couple of tickets fairly recently. It's been a while, but in 2016, you had a minor, and you had your last major in January 2015 for disrupting counts. So what happened with these last two tickets, sir?
The last one with disrupting count, I think that was the one where I had woke up late. I didn't realize what time it was, and I had took a shower, and he had came into the shower. And he said, who was in the shower? And I gave him my bed number, my house number. He said it was count. So I was rushing to get out of the shower, and he felt that I didn't get out quick enough. report. And I told him at the time that I was sorry. It was another person, too, over in the shower, too. And he got out about 3-4 minutes later after I had got out, but he had already counted and wrote both of us up. And I went, you know, to disciplinary. I explained that to him, that I wasn't trying to disrupt count or anything.
Okay, sir. And you had a minor in 2016. What happened there?
2016. Oh, that was for in the kitchen, I think, when I had ate a plate of food. I was working in the back, and I didn't get to eat. While they were serving then, I was a prep cook then, and I had to get meal ready for dinner, and that was lunch. I had missed lunch, and I had went in there, and I ate part of the meal that we had for dinner, because it wasn't enough lunch left, so I ate part of what I had prepared for dinner as my lunch, and they got kind of upset because I didn't eat it in the dining hall. I ate it back in my area where I worked at, so they had put me on report for that. They gave me, when I went to disciplinary for that, they gave me a right reprimand. And I think it was 30 days where I couldn't get a ticket, something like that.
Okay. Sir, I stated in my summary that there did not appear to be any letters of support. So do you have any support in the community? Family?
I have my sister and everything, but I didn't want, you know, they're kind of like, I didn't want to put my burden upon them because I know they're working, and this is another reason why I choose SACRAC to go to, because I want to make it on my own to be able to show them that I've tried to do things on my own in a good way and get on my feet, and then this way they'll appreciate me more, because my sister always tell me, we didn't leave you, you left us. And when I heard that and everything, over the years I feel like I want to earn my way back into their lives by doing something positive for myself. Family is real important to me. I mean, I love my family. I feel like I deserted them, and I want to be able to climb back on my feet. And it's not just the support system that I'm looking for. I worked for 35 cents in here for 28 years of my life. And rather than to just, you know, receive support from, you know, resources, I looked at the minimum wage thing, and at $11 an hour, if I could work for 35 cents in here at $11 an hour, that's $1,700 and something. And I went to taking out possible fees after a year, because see, the program at SACRAC, they allow you to stay there for a year, year and a half, until you save money and financially get on your feet to where you could move out. And this is what I was looking at. I look at things like I'll have parole fees. I plan on getting into other programs that help me, and I know they're going to cost some. It would give me money to pay for my classes that I'm going to continue to take. And at the same time, it allows me to save money.
Okay, I'm going to ask my fellow board members if they have any questions for you, Mr. July. Yes, Governor Ms. Gail Rittenhouse.
Thank you. Mr. July, I'm looking at your discipline record again, and there's one in 2014 for possession and manufacturing of intoxicants, and that you were found guilty of a major then, sir. Do you remember what that was about?
That was for alcohol.
Okay, in 2014?
2014.
That's the date that's here.
Yeah, that was for alcohol. I had made four question that was in Dote because they used to say, people had knew I used to make it, and a guy wanted me to make some for him, and I shouldn't have done it, but, you know, I did it, and I got caught for making it.
So you didn't make it for yourself to drink, you made it for somebody else?
Yes.
Okay.
I wasn't drinking at the time, I would. Yeah.
Got it. Okay. All right. Thank you. Thank you, Mr. Quinones.
Thank you, Mr. Quinones. Any further questions? Yes, all about the right.
Yes, thank you so very much, Honorable Mr. Quinones. Now, Mr. Gula, I'm impressed with you, but one thing I take note, you know, you sent some of your certificates, and I see one that you sent dated January the 1st of this year. That you financed for Peace University. What persuaded you to take that course, sir?
Because I wanted to learn how to save money, and I wanted to learn a business trade.
And has that course been helpful to you, sir?
I can't hear you.
Has that course been helpful to you?
Yes, it has. It has helped me save $400 and something when I used to couldn't save no money. I've made a lot of sacrifices, a lot of foods and stuff that I would normally buy to eat. I would not buy them. I made a lot of sacrifices because I knew I needed to save some money to try to, you know, have for myself when I'm released. To help me get on my foot. It was awesome to me. I learned a lot of things. I learned a lot of discipline from it, too.
Now, sir, is that the program that you get off on the radio? Is that that same program? How did you take that course, sir?
No, we took it here at the prison. It's a peer aid educator program.
Oh.
And it's one of the programs that was done through Miss Ellis.
Now, Mr. Gillard, back to we spoke of you before, but just trying to make sure that we understand progress that you've made over the years. If you were sitting where we're sitting, or sitting where I'm sitting today, what would you say? What would you be looking for? What should I be looking for to feel that you've made enough progress to be released out in the community, sir? What have you done? What have you done that to justify me as a board member, put my reputation out there, vote for you to be released, sir?
Well, see, back then, when I first came to prison, I was very young. I didn't understand the laws or anything. Since I've been in prison, I educated myself. I learned what the Constitution and why it was put in place. I've also done things to correct my mistakes. I made a lot of bad choices from the bottom of a bottle. And now that I sit before you, I am not that young, uneducated, stupid person that I was before. I made drastic changes. I am ready to go out into society and make a difference and possibly help someone that had a troubled past as I did. These are the things that I've changed in my life. I'm old now. I have bad eyesight. My health is kind of bad, and I'm trying to just go out and do the right things. I have a love for people. I want to treat people the way I want to be treated now. I wouldn't want to work right now and work hard for 2-3 weeks and then somebody come along and rob me. That's not the right thing to do. I wouldn't want to do that to nobody, and not only that, just inside of prison. can guarantee you one thing, I will never come back to prison again. I know when I was on parole once before I had violated, but at the time I was young and naive then. I'm no longer like that now.
So you're saying that this time, if you get out again, you're saying that you're not going to violate again, sir?
I'll never come back to prison ever again. There's no crime in the world that would make me come back to this or what I have to come back to. And at my age, nothing. And I'm willing to continue to do programs and reach out to somebody that may need the same type of support and help that I once needed.
And I think you already answered this, but would you repeat the answer again? Why have you selected Sacramento the place where you want to reside for that first year, sir? Why did you select that program?
I like the fact that they have social workers there that take time to engage with the inmates to help them get back on their feet. They slowly get you ready for society instead of, you know, it's not like you're just going out there in the dark and you know, just out there. They help you. And this is what I need. It gives me a sense of authority, somebody that can oversee my actions and keep me on the right path, because reoffending is not an option for me. I'm too old for this, and I realize and understand what laws are, and I mean, I don't want to hurt nobody. I can't afford to hurt nobody. I'm more worried about somebody hurting me now that I'm older and wiser to the reality of things now. The programs that they have, plus the counselors here that's confirming with me, they said that would be a good program for me, and I feel it would be too, because it gives me a chance to ease my way back in society, and it gives me a year to a year and a half of saving. This way I can have something and make a life for myself once in a while. I like the fact that they have a curfew there, you know, from 6 to 2, 6 in the morning to 2, they take you wherever you want to go to find a job. They help you with clothing and your vouchers and everything. It's just a good related program, and I feel that I could fit right in there.
You just asked me another question. I think you already answered this one, but I probably missed it. Who are your family supporters? Do you have any family supporters in Arizona?
Yes, I have a sister. She's still living, and I have a brother. He's still living. Then I lost two sisters. I lost a brother, and I lost my mom. I lost my mom back in 2003. And she came to see me. She died of colon cancer. She had came to see me. And she told me, she said, son, she said, if you ever get the chance, see, I was raised up in Reverend Black's church, and I also went to Pilgrim's Rest, and Pastor Bishop was my last pastor that I used to correspond with, but I recently heard he passed away. And I still think Reverend Black is still out there. I'm not sure. I haven't heard from him in almost 4 or 5 years. But these are people that would support me, you know, when I got out. But what I need to do for myself is prove to them and my family that I can make it on my own and save money. And then they'll see the person that I have changed. I wanna earn my respect back into their lives. Because when I think about it, they didn't leave me, I left them. And sometimes it hurts me, you know, because family was all I had. And you know, I don't wanna put that burden on them. I want them to see the man that I've changed right now. And I want to do that by earning my respect by doing the right things.
As you know, we as a board member, we cannot tell you what to do, what you should do, what you should not do, but why haven't you had some of them to send letters or at least express some support to or for you? Speaking specifically of Dr. Black, who's 94 years of age now, but he's still pastor of South Phoenix Baptist Church down there. And of course, as you stated, Bishop Thomas at Pilgrim Rest, he died last summer, I believe, maybe June, July, last year. But even before his death, I don't see the letters from people like that. You know, they are, you know, they're pillars of society, but, you know, why have you never asked them to speak on your behalf, sir?
I will pass the bishop back during the 90s, 94, 95, and I kind of got out of touch with him. I hadn't heard from him in a while. Because he used to have me on his prayer list back in the 90s, from 90 to 91, 92, 93. Those were the times that I was corresponding with him. And I guess, you know, he was doing a lot of conventions or things that he was doing, we just kind of fell off a break.
I'm just curious, you know, it would have been very helpful for some of us, for me in particular, if, you know, if we had, you know, something from, well, we can't get anything from Bishop Thomas now because he's dead, but, you know, Dr. Black, he's still living. I just say that because no reason, I'm just saying since I saw him last week, last Friday, I saw him, and that's why he's on my mind at this particular moment, so I was just asking. Okay, sir, well, thank you so very much, and Honorable Scorns, I don't have any further questions.
Thank you, now, sir. Okay, Mr. July, we're getting very close to the end of your hearing. Is there a final statement you would like to make to the board before we go into discussion? We only ask that you don't repeat anything that you've already told us, and you've told us quite a bit, but this is your hearing, so is there anything else that you feel is important for us to know or understand before we go into discussion? Thank you, sir.
Other than I could, my sisters, I could have them write letters and everything. But if I was granted parole, I could write your, to show you good faith that I have good intentions to stay free and not reoffend. I could write a 90-day review of what I, of my accomplishments that I'm accomplishing out there, in hopes that within the next 5 to 10 years or so that I'd be let completely off of parole once you see that I am making progress and I'm not reoffended and I'm sincere about staying free out there, drug free, alcohol free, and I'm also showing progress of helping others where help need to be done.
Thank you, Mr. July. The board will be going into discussion now. It may sound like we're speaking with you directly, but it is the board discussing the case amongst itself under the open meeting laws of Arizona. So if you will just remain on the phone, we will come back to you shortly with our decision. Thank you, sir.
Thank you.
The board is now in discussion. Fellow board members, I certainly like Mr. July's attitude and his sense of accountability. I recognize that he has a criminal history that reaches back further than the current charges, and of course the current charges are very serious, with a conspiracy to commit murder, but he was very direct about his involvement and where he was at in his mind and maturity during those days. I think I also like that he is interested in the Pima Reentry Center
which shows some willingness to make an easy or even transition back to the community. PRC is not something that is often asked for directly, and this is not to say that we can send him to PRC, nor have that authority, but I at least like the way he's thinking. I do have concerns about him having discipline, which is to say tickets as recently as 15 and 16, major 15 and minor 16. And while there is no magic number, I personally feel more comfortable when there's a longer period of time without discipline, as it is an indication as to whether someone is willing to adhere to the conditions of supervised release. Going back to the positives, I recognize that he is not a kid anymore, so to speak. He's business-minded. I like that he has had support from the faith community. And I think at this point, I would like to see a bit more support, and I recognize that we can make no promises, but that he has made reference to showing some more of that support, either through family or faith community, and I think that would be a big step toward showing his capacity to make that transition, but that's where I'll begin the discussion. Yes, sir, the other one is Gilbert House.
Thank you, Mr. Quinones. I'm kind of with you. I appreciate Mr. July's attitude. I do think he's a lot wiser. You know, as we get older, we get wiser. it just happens with age. I appreciate that he's given up alcohol, drugs, and even smoking. I think that's a positive step for him. And as we get older, you know, one more thing, that kind of stuff kind of is hard on our health. But I am with you. I would like to see some more support. And I'm not sure, and I can check on this with Department of Corrections, I'm not sure that SACRAC, which is now called Penal Reentry Center, does allow people to stay there for a year anymore. I'm not sure about that. So I think it would be good to have other options besides just, you know, counting on that being available. But I would like to, you know, hear a better plan, you know, hear kind of a more solid release plan. Thank you, Mr. Quinones.
Thank you, Honorable Ms. Gail Rittenhouse, Senator Lindquist, for my colleague.
Can I bring up the two of you?
Well, thank you. I'm going to go ahead and make a motion then, and that is regarding Mr. Roosevelt, July, ADC number 035100. My motion is to deny regular parole, absolute discharge or home arrest. And based on the year of the offense, I'm also asking for a 1-year set off, and that is my motion.
Second.
Agree.
Seconded by the Honorable Ms. Gail Rittenhouse. Agreed upon by the Honorable Dr. Wright. Mr. Neal?
I think we should.
Yes, sir.
I think we should give him a pass on this one.
Okay. Then I am going to ask for one year set off once again. Release type denied is 412, 411, or home arrest. Reasons for denial are as follows. Serious and violent offense. Victim harassment. I guess with kidnapping included, I'll say serious and deviant offense. Violated. Strike that. History of a repeat offender on the kidnapping, prior criminal history, for institutional behavior, because we have had issues within the last three to four years, recent discipline over the last 3 to 4 years. Good programming, so I will check that. He has a decent release plan. I will check no family or community support system. Is there anything else that my colleagues wish to add? Okay, Mr. July, the board has voted to deny regular parole, absolute discharge, or home arrest. And we asked for 1 year set off, but I really want to be encouraging here. We're not giving you a hard time. I think you presented very well today. I liked what you had to show the board. To sort of quote my colleague Ms. Rittenhouse, I think you showed some maturity and growth. We can make no promises, but I think between now and the next hearing would be a really good time to reach out for support, to look into some alternatives as to where you might live. The Honorable Ms. Rittenhouse pointed out we're not altogether sure about how long you might be accepted into the Pima County Reentry Center, and in the case that we had voted to allow supervised release, we certainly would have made a note of it, but it's not a promise we can make from the board. So we're encouraging you to reach out to that support from family, from your faith community, and to have some options for where you might want to live. And we will take a very hard look at this case again the next time you come before the board. I do want to thank you for being so pleasant, for being so direct, and for showing really good accountability this morning. Do you have any questions, Mr. July?
No. I'll try to get support, though, from my family and reach out to my pastor. I have to get his address because I had it, but I don't know what I've done with it.
Well, hopefully in the coming months you can research that, work with your CO3, and we do look forward to meeting with you again, Mr. July. So please stay safe, and we will see you again in approximately 1 year.
Okay.
Thank you, sir. If you could just set down the phone and tell your CO3 that we're, well, if you can get your CO3, and then we will close up here. Thank you, sir.
Okay.